Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Cleanaway FY 2021 half-year results presentation. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. For the phone parties, to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. For the webcast participants, to ask a question, please type your question into the Ask a Question box and click Submit. I would now like to hand the conference over to Vik Bansal, CEO and Managing Director. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. With me today is our outgoing CFO and current Chief Operating Officer, Brendan Gill, our new CFO, Paul Binfield, and Head of Investor Relations, Richie Farrell, also join us on the call. I appreciate you joining us this morning in what will be my final results presentation for Cleanaway. Before I run through the presentation, I will direct you to our ASX release for further commentary on the results. I will also refer you to the disclaimer on slide two of this pack. Can I ask you now to please move to slide three? In terms of the agenda for today, I'll run through the people and culture update and our group and segment performance. Brendan will cover the statutory to underlying NPAT reconciliation, balance sheet, cash flow, and debt. I will circle back to update you on recent Footprint 2025 initiatives, including upgrades on energy from waste, plastics recycling, and data and automation. I will then hand back to Brendan to finish the presentation with the priorities for the remainder of the year and the FY 2021 outlook before opening for questions. Now moving to people and culture on slide four. Slide four highlights our safety and engagement performance over time. I'm pleased to report that once again, we have further improved our TRIFR, Total Recordable Injury Frequency Rate. As of 31st of December 2020, TRIFR was 4.1, representing more than 60% improvement from when I first reported it to you almost 5.5 years ago. This has been achieved while our workforce has increased by a further 2,000  employees. We are always striving to improve our safety performance, and zero harm remains our goal, as all our people are entitled to safe work environment. We conducted an employee engagement survey in October last year, as we do every year, and reported a record level of engagement at  64%, with 86% of all employees responding to the survey. In our previous investor series presentation, we benchmarked this against ANZ enterprises, and we are close to the top quartile. We recorded an engagement survey results of 42% in 2014, so we have come a long way, and I'm confident of us achieving a top quartile score in the near future. We have another survey scheduled for this half as we look to implement learnings that we have taken from the feedback received. As you can see from the chart in the bottom right, we are heavily weighted towards blue-collar frontline workers. If you add in frontline office-bound staff, such as customer service, admin, and schedulers, etc., and over 90% of our workforce is front-facing and sits across 250 depots across the country. Also, as I mentioned when we first released the engagement results, it was very pleasing to note that within this survey, 80% of our employees confirmed that we managed the business very well through COVID-19. Moving on to slide five. Diversity continues to improve as the business continues to grow. As expected, with key integration activities now completed, voluntary turnover has reduced significantly while employment continues to grow. The tenure of employees across various levels of the organization remains steady. We have improved safety, engagement, diversity, tenure, and operating cadence through our Cleanaway Way while delivering sustained financial performance over the last 5 years. For those who are new, during this time, we have transferred the company through cost down, brand change, and multiple strategic acquisitions, followed by then successful integrations. We have fixed the legacy remediation issue and ensured capital discipline while growing price infrastructure and our fleet size. I trust these two slides provide everybody with a factual indication of the cultural health of the company, a company which employs 6,000 people across 250 locations spread across the country. Now moving on to slide six. Slide six covers the highlights of our first half FY21 results, our progress on the few key strategic initiatives, and our outlook statement. We will discuss each of the items mentioned here in more detail in the following slides. On to slide seven. I'm pleased to report another half year of strong growth or an improvement across all key financial metrics. Notwithstanding the continuing effects of COVID-19 on the economy, our net revenue was marginally higher than the prior corresponding period at $1.07 billion and 3.9% higher than the second half of FY20. Underlying EBITDA was 2.9% higher at $263.8 million. Cost initiatives and operating leverage drove an improvement in EBITDA margin of 60 basis points to a record of 24.6%. Underlying EBIT was 3.9% higher, and EBIT margin improved by 50 basis points again to a record of 12.4%. Underlying NPAT was 6.5% higher, and EPS was 2.7% higher than first half 20. Compared to first half 20, operating cash flow increased 28.8% to $202.4 million. The board has declared an interim dividend of 2.25 cents, which is 12.5% up on the prior corresponding period and is fully franked at 30%. This dividend represents a payout ratio of 59.1% of the underlying net profit after tax, which is also another high watermark for the company. Turning to slide 8. We've included the next two slides to illustrate the journey of the improvement that we delivered in terms of the financial performance of the business. The equivalent charts for each full financial year have been included in the appendix for reference. As you would see, we have consistently grown earnings with a significant margin expansion during this time. This has been achieved through a clear strategy and a disciplined capital allocation. Moving to slide 9. The operational improvements we have made, along with our disciplined approach to cash management, have continued to drive an increased shareholder returns. I'm particularly pleased with the consistent growth of EPS, free cash flow, and dividends during this time. Clearway still has a significant number of observable growth opportunities, and the company, with its very good management team, are very well placed, both operationally and financially, to develop further opportunities. The sector thematic supports our strategy, particularly as a significant market participant with strong operational credentials. I will now cover the operational results on the following slide, so turning to slide 10. We have included this slide again to highlight the diversity and defensive characteristics of our revenue streams. Across the three segments, we touch all parts of the economy and therefore benefit from the general economic growth, which also adds to the defensive nature of the company. Even in weaker economy, our revenues are robust, as waste streams typically move from one segment to the another. As you would also see again, commodity revenue represents a very, very small part of our overall revenue story. Moving on to slide 11. The solid waste services segment covers the collection, recovery, and disposal of solid waste. Waste streams in this segment include putrescible, inert, household, and recovered waste. Core customer segments include municipals, commercial, and industrial. These waste streams are processed through a prized infrastructure assets, such as resource recovery and recycling facilities, waste transfer stations, and landfills. Net revenue and EBITDA grew 2.1% and 2.8% respectively on the prior corresponding year period, with EBITDA margin increasing by 20 basis points. Compared with second half 20 net revenue and EBITDA, net revenue and EBITDA increased 5.8% and 1.6% respectively. The segment benefited in the half from an initial contribution from Victorian Commingled Resource Recovery business, which is the SKM business, the commencement of new contracts of City of KC in Melbourne and South Australia Council Solutions contracts. They were obviously partially offside by the lower SME activity due to pandemic. Contributions from the recently acquired strategic Grasshopper C&D collection business and statewide recycling and landfill business also benefited this segment. The rebuild of Perth MRF is well advanced, with operations expected to recommence in the fourth quarter. This facility will deliver a high-quality recycling service in the Perth market. During the period, Cleanway won several national and large mid-market accounts. We also secured a landfill height extension at Erskine Park in Sydney that will extend the life of that asset. Cleanway also successfully tendered for a Blackstown City Council recycling processing services, a significant and strategic contract that will support the development of 115,000-ton material resource recycling facility for Cleanway Invest in Sydney. Moving on to industrial and waste services segment on slide 12. The IWS segment provides a wide variety of services, mainly to the resources and infrastructure markets. Services include drain cleaning, high-pressure cleaning, non-destructive digging, and vacuum loading. As you can see, this segment had margin expansion on a shrinking revenue. Net revenue of $151.7 million was 8.4% lower than the prior period, but 2.7% higher than the prior 6 months. Underlying EBITDA of $23.8 million was 3% higher, and underlying EBITDA margin increased significantly by 180 basis points. This reflected the successful execution of the strategy of exiting low-value work streams. The segment met its medium-term margin target as set out during FY20 results roadshow. The segment has performed well by securing new business and offsetting the headwinds of a lower discretionary spending for many customers, in particular, infrastructure-related activities in Brisbane market, service related to the aviation market, the oil and gas segment more broadly. We are looking to target more opportunities in public sector, marine and ports, and iron ore mining. Recent contract wins include Southern Ports and the Australian Submarine Corporation. Now moving on to the Liquid Waste and Health Services segment on slide 13. The Liquid Waste and Health Services segment covers three national strategic business units: Liquids and Technical Services, Hydrocarbons, and Health. Net revenues were down 2.3%, but EBITDA was up 4.4%, with EBITDA margins growing significantly 140 basis points to 21.8%. The segment met its medium-term margin target as set out by us only 7 months ago during FY20 results roadshow. In Hydrocarbons, lower collection and waste volumes in COVID-19 impacted regions, which were offset by improved pricing, service improvements, and efficiency initiatives. In Health, we improved the earnings. A significant increase in waste from hospital and aged care facilities arising from the second wave of pandemic in Victoria offset the downturn in elective surgeries and quarantine work coming from cruise ships and airlines. In Liquid Technical Services, we saw lower volumes in the tourist-heavy states, particularly Queensland. Hospitality, cruise ships, and automotive sectors were also negatively impacted. Offsetting this was extra synergy benefits resulting from the completion of Doxer integration, which has improved the quality of our revenue and earnings. I will now pass over to Brennan.
Thanks, Vic. Moving now to slide 14. The statutory profit after tax attributable to ordinary equity holders was $78.3 million. The underlying adjustments to EBIT totaled $6.9 million and comprised $5.1 million of additional costs to process recyclables following the Perth MRF fire and $3.3 million acquisition integration costs, largely related to the Grasshopper and Stall landfill acquisitions, partially offset by the benefit of a higher landfill remediation and rectification discount rate. During the period, we renegotiated a fixed interest rate facility, resulting in a $7.9 million reduction in interest expense over the life of the facility, which is recognised in the half. This was partially offset by a small movement in the fair value of cross-currency interest rate swaps. Our resulting underlying NPAT attributable to ordinary equity holders was $77.9 million, with underlying NPAT being lower than statutory NPAT. Turning now to the balance sheet on slide 15. Our balance sheet remains strong and we continue to maintain our culture of financial discipline. The PP&E and intangibles increase reflects acquisitions including the Grasshopper and Stall businesses. We further invested in new fleets and equipment to meet the growth from new municipal and other contracts that Vic referred to previously. The decrease in other assets reflects the fair value movement in cross-currency interest rate swaps associated with the USPP notes and is offset by an equivalent change in interest-bearing liabilities. The landfill remediation provision reduction from June 2020 reflects remediation payments made and the increase in the discount rate offset by the unwind of discounting and acquired remediation liabilities. The deferred settlement liability mainly represents annual fixed payments relating to the Melbourne Regional Landfill discounted to present value. Turning now to the cash flow on slide 16. We continue to maintain a high level of fiscal discipline at Cleanaway and our cash flow outcomes are consistent with this commitment. Our net cash from operating activities increased by $45.3 million compared to the prior corresponding period, reflecting 14.4 million lower remediation cash flow as previously guided, lower tax paid and lower underlying adjustment related cash flows. Higher cash capex reflects a weighting towards first half capex spend in FY21, including expenditure on the replacement Perth MRF. Our free cash flow therefore increased 12.9 million to 117.9 million due to higher net cash from operating activities, partially offset by higher cash capex. I'm particularly pleased that our cash conversion rate continued to be strong at 97.9%. This result was achieved after absorbing additional receivables from our acquisitions and the repayment of working capital support provided by governments in the June 20 half in response to the onset of COVID. Turning now to our debt on slide 17. Our debt is well under control, with a net debt to underlying EBITDA ratio of 1.57 times for debt covenant testing purposes. This is well below our debt covenant limits of 3 times. This is a level that provides us the flexibility we need in the future to fund selected earnings accretive projects and acquisitions, with $433 million of headroom under our facilities at the end of December. Our gearing ratio, defined as net debt over net debt plus equity, is currently at 27.8% and is inclusive of the AASB 16 leases now shown as debt. Our average debt maturity at 31 December was 5.5 years. I will now hand you back to Vic.
Thank you, Brendan. On slide 18, our disciplined approach to the allocation of capital has not diminished. The standard capital expenditure spend levels in global waste management companies is usually around 10% of net revenue. While this remains our target, we should retain the flexibility to deviate slightly from this target from time to time to accelerate growth in a strong performing segments. Now moving on to slide 19. As part of our journey, we have always focused on improving not only the earnings, but the quality of earnings. Throughout the 5.5 year journey, we have targeted margin expansion across each segment and hence across the enterprise. After the initial targets were met, we revised our targets to reflect not only the AASB 16 and further improvements in each segment during the FY20 full year results. All these segments have continued to improve. In the solid waste services segment, margin again improved with an increase in actual earnings by 20 basis points to 27.8%. And the target for solid remains between 29 and 29.5. I'm very pleased to confirm that in the 2 out of 3 segments, which is liquids and health and IWS, we have already reached the range committed 6-7 months ago. This is on back of the further synergies being monetized and focus on cost as COVID-19's impact persisted. So for industrial and waste services, our EBITDA margin was 15.7 and the range we set was 15.5 and 16. For liquids based and health services, we have reached 21.8% margin on consistently improving earnings, while the range was 21.5% and 22%. Now, obviously, this is only one half, and the idea is obviously to make sure this becomes steady part of the business moving forward. You will also notice in the graphs a significant jump in the earnings of each segment along with improvement in margins. This clearly illustrates how operating leverage works. But of course, operating leverage can only be monetized by an operating discipline and our CleanAway wave, which has been a game changer in this regard, bringing in required cadence, focus, and alignment in a waste management business. Now moving on to strategic initiatives and starting with Footprint 2025 on slide 20. Most of you will have seen this slide before. A journey of creating value by moving waste through an integrated value chain has been core to our Footprint 2025. Building price infrastructure, organically and inorganically, has been a key to creating a long-term strategic moat for the company. Execution, cadence, and delivering on commitments to shareholders while remaining true to the strategic intent has resulted in a good outcomes for the company. Moving on to slide 21. Now, this is a new slide which we wanted to give you a little bit more clarity of what else is going on in Footprint 2025. So along with our greenfield developments and acquisition, we also continue to invest in brownfield developments. We typically refer to these as a BAU infrastructure developments, mainly managed by in-house engineering infrastructure teams. And as you can see from this slide, there's a significant activity in this space. These developments are not or may not be individually material investments per se, but keep our infrastructure contemporary and always high investment grade. Together with our greenfield developments and acquisition on page 20 and our BAU infrastructure development on page 22, they combine to create the strategic moat for our business. Moving on to slide 22. This slide covers two recent transactions that, while relatively small, were strategically important to us. Grasshopper was a strategic entry into New South Wales construction and demolition market. Cleanway is now the second largest C&D player nationally, while still maintaining C&D exposure at less than 10% of the revenue. Now, with Grasshopper, we have a C&D exposure across each state and each region around the country. The business has an infrastructure and commercial segment focus, multi-year contracts, and a well-established and recognized brand. The Stowell landfill, which came as part of the statewide acquisition, is a prized asset, creating a competitive, vertically integrated solid business in regional Western Victoria. We definitely see the competitiveness of regional landfills improving based on new regulation that will see the levy gap between regional and metro levies widen even further. Turning to slide 23. The last two slides cover the physical infrastructure that we are developing to deliver the Footprint 2025 strategy. Equally important to this strategy is the technology, data, and analytics that can support improved profitability through optimization of these assets, clever insights, and on-time decision-making. All of this enhances our strategic moat. For those new to Cleanaway, I will direct you to an investor presentation that we made in December 2020 that addresses this in more detail. This slide is a brief summary of the key drivers and enablers and the work streams we are undertaking as part of that project. Price optimization will drive smarter pricing decision through targeted pricing opportunities. Sales effectiveness and churn management provides revenue and margin expansion opportunities through understanding the customer lifecycle. Route optimization will improve density across our network. Footprint network optimizes location of our key priced infrastructure. And plant and optimization drives efficiency across all our post-collection facilities. These enablers develop and embed the tools and assets to drive further margin expansion in both our collection and post-collection businesses and across all our segments. Slide 24. As you know from previous presentations, we have been doing a lot in plastics value chain extension space. A significant opportunity exists to generate value from recyclable polymers. Annually, there are almost 2 million tons of polymers consumed that are suitable for mechanical recycling. As domestic export bans are implemented, Australia will require 140,000 tons of domestic processing capacity to address the volumes that are currently being exported for reprocessing. As plastic recovery rates increase, further opportunities will emerge. The right policy and market settings are in place to ensure investment in necessary capacity can be made. We've already committed to a 45 million PET plastic pelletizing facility in Albury, which has commenced construction. Following the formation of a JV to build the PET plastic pelletizing facility, Cleanway has entered into further JVs to target the opportunity in HDPE, LDP, and PP plastic recycling. During the half year, Victorian and federal governments awarded JV $3 million in grant funding for HDPE, PP, LDP pelletizing facility in Melbourne, and the WN federal government awarded further $9.5 million in grant funding for PET, HDP, PP, LDP flaking facility in Perth. Now, moving on to slide 24 for a recap and update on energy from waste development. In October 2019, we announced our plans to develop an energy from waste facility in Western Sydney and the acquisition of a site in Eastern Creek. The announcement followed a very detailed multi-criteria assessment to find the optimum site and months of confidential consultation with various stakeholders, including the Department of Planning, Industry and Environment, which is called DPI, and the EPA. The plant facility will be able to process 500,000 tons of residual waste that cannot be recycled and turn this into power for as much as 65,000 homes. This represents less than a third of 1.6 million tons currently sent to landfill from Western Sydney. It will enable us to internalize putrescible waste from our C&I business and offer a landfill diversion solution to local council. We will invest in advanced European technology, which is proven to be safe and will meet European emission standards, which are the most stringent in the world. We have completed the exhibition of Environmental Impact Statement, EIS for short, and expect to receive final approval sometime during 2021. I will discuss the process from here in more detail in the next slide. In parallel, we continue engagement with the local community councils, government, and other stakeholders in relation to this project. We are encouraged by the overwhelmingly positive reactions to date, but are conscious of the need to continue to build a very strong social license to operate. Now moving to slide 26. As I mentioned, the EIS exhibition phase is complete. We are currently in the response to submission stage where we respond to all submissions publicly. The DPI department, called DPI, will then assess and either request further information or will make the recommendations on the project. Due to there being more than 50 submissions objecting to the proposal, the Independent Planning Commission will then be requested by DPI to review the recommendation and make a determination on the project. Determination by IPC at this point is expected towards the end of calendar 2021. To assist with responding to the submissions, we continue to engage with all key stakeholders on the project, including DPI, EPA, New South Wales Health, etc. I will now hand back to Brendan to take you through our priorities, outlook, and guidance for FY21.
Thanks, Vic. I'd firstly like to state there is no change to our strategy. Delivering improved sustainability together with profitable organic growth remain our key priorities across all three segments of the business. We remain focused on improving our quality of earnings through near-term operational initiatives and longer-term initiatives driven by the data analytics and automation project. Consistent with our mission of making a sustainable future possible, we will continue to progress our plastic palletising and energy from waste project developments. In addition, we'll continue to evaluate accretive bolt-on acquisitions and position Cleanaway for emerging opportunities as the industry continues to consolidate. We note the continued uncertainty in the trading environment, more so in some regions and industries than others. Despite this, and as stated at the AGM, Cleanaway remains confident that the full year FY21 underlying EBITDA will be moderately higher than FY20. Before opening up for questions, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Vic for the huge contribution he's made in turning around Cleanaway and making it the company we have today. This has been achieved through his leadership, drive, and tremendous work ethic. We now have a company with a rock-solid foundation from which we can continue to grow the benefit of all stakeholders while delivering on our mission to make a sustainable future possible. I thank you, Vic, for your significant contribution to our company to ensure it is well positioned to grow and prosper in the future. Now I'd like to open the lines for any questions. Travis, could you please open the lines?
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question via the phones, please press star 1 on your phone and wait for your name to be announced. Via the webcast, you can type your question into the Ask a Question box and click Submit. The first phone question comes from Alex Karpos from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, team. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, morning, Alex. We can hear you. No worries.
Perfect. Well, look, first of all, Vic, just want to say thank you again for everything. Echo Brendan's comments and best of luck from here on out. Turning to the questions, first of all, on the SME side, you called that out as a bit of a driver, a bit of a drag on the solids business in the half. You know, how was the trajectory over the half and what was the run rate exiting the period looking like?
Yeah, so as you expected, Alex, SMEs are the most impacted by COVID. As I said before, during the full year results roadshow, we are finding South Australia and WA generally back to normal, apart from when they go into temporary lockdowns, as WA recently went. We are definitely finding SMEs slower in the East Coast, and obviously Victoria being the most affected in the first half during the lockdown. What we are definitely finding interesting is that when the lockdown gets lifted, we do find they tend to come back quicker. If you remember when we did the full year results, when the first lockdown happened in the last quarter of last year, we were not 100% sure how quickly they are coming back. What we are now finding is when the lockdown lifts, they don't normally come back to full form quickly, but there's definitely a spike of coming back to normal. So we do find phone calls coming back to us quickly to open the business up. So we are finding that definitely for sure. But if you remember, if you compare half on half, second half of last year versus first half of this year, in the second half of last year, COVID was in the one full quarter. in the first half of this year, COVID was practically across the full half. I mean, Victoria was practically shut down for 4 out of 6 months. So definitely the trend, when they come back fast, but on a half-on-half basis, I still say SME is still a challenge for us.
Thanks, that's very clear. And on liquids, margin performance in the half was very strong at the top end of that guidance range. Is there anything one-off to call out there, or is there anything to keep us from thinking that it can't stay at the higher end of that range for longer?
Well, I think one of the things, Alex, we'll have to remember, this is one half. So one of the challenges Brendan and the team would have is to make sure they stay that way, of course, and we normally try to call it after a couple of halves once we have done. So that's number one. Number two, this is the business which most benefited from tox-free synergies. And if you have done the integration well, then generally, some synergies flow through in half beyond when the integration got completed. So there was an element of that. This business, the leaders know very well that when the market is down, in fact, all leaders in Cleanway now know when the market is down, they know pretty well quickly to pull the cost lever. And that's what they did. And this is a portfolio. Liquids and technical was impacted by COVID quarter. Health was plus and minus, plus in a sense, aged care and all that stuff was helping us, but elective surgeries went down, and hydrocarbons was the old thing. So they've done a very good job, frankly. In fact, all three segment leaders have done a very good job of making sure they manage cost as the revenue falls, the revenue ups and downs. So that's what you're going to see. And frankly, that is what waste management should be. I mean, that's what operating leverage is. We've talked many times before. You manage that cost right with the moving revenue, you should get margin expansion.
Thanks. That's it for me.
Thank you. The next question comes from Russell Gill from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just to follow on, I think you tried to dodge some of the question at the very first one, Vic, so I'm going to try and hold you to it. Just in terms of the run rate as you've exited the first half on volumes, we can see through the landfill levy that obviously, there's less going into Victorian landfill, but presumably that was very much first quarter related. Can you give us a feel just what you're seeing, firstly on volumes as you exit sort of December, January on the PCP across the entire solids business? And secondly, presumably what has that meant for competition? Is there risk that when volumes are down that you see some price into the market as people clamber for volume? What have you seen from the pricing and competition in the market over that time period as well?
Right. But there is no doubt. I mean, it's extremely difficult to compare volume just half and half overall, simply because every state is at a different point of pandemic journey, as you know, right? So what is definitely down is, let's say, CBD, commercial, and industrial. I mean, you all work in CBD. You know that volume is down. Airlines, tourism, that's down. On the flip side, as you know, muni volumes are up, both in pickup as well as the post-collection. So that's happening. And the CNI volume in the suburb is okay. I generally cannot give you volume is down or up. I mean, it's state-by-state trend. Victoria was down, of course, as you can imagine, simply because of the COVID. South Australia, WA was up. New South Wales was down, and Queensland was flat. I think that's the best way I can put through the solid one. And what was the second question you asked, Russell? Was around the competition.
I mean, you've highlighted that volumes are obviously down in, I guess, the shorter data contracts. So muni volumes are up, which are pretty protected because they're generally longer dated. What are you seeing, I guess, from competition around because of those short dated contracts?
Yeah, so I must say, the other thing I want to mention here, by the way, so one of the things we measure in our company is the amount of footprint we pick up our waste from, so which is the number of sites we pick up. The number of sites we are picking up today is about 4% up on last year. So while the volume may be down, also, the number of sites we are picking up is more. So that tells me that's an indication that we are winning market share. Now, the true impact of that will be shown when the actual volume returns fully back to normal. So there are two elements here, volume and how many sites we're picking up. So that's a pretty good sign for us at this point. Our sales team is winning a fair amount of good contracts, national and mid-market. And I'm not seeing what I call irrational pricing behavior at this point, either at a post-collection element or a collection element. So that's not a big issue for us right now at this point, but our number of sites pickup is definitely up.
Great. And then just if we look at the medium-term margins in the SWS segment, do you think that the business can be achieved those that target, medium-term target, just purely through, you know, volume recovery and operating leverage? Or is there a requirement to really build out your footprint 2025? So energy from waste, Queensland landfill, you know, what do you need to get to that margin?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One, I do think we would have a better handle as a company once the market goes back to normal. If the sites are picking up and the volume comes back to normal, that should flow in some level of operating leverage, right? So we are sitting about 140, 120 basis points to the medium-term target. I think if I can be bold enough, and Brendan, jump in after I finish mine, I think half of this would possibly can come through post-COVID time. The volumes are back because the extra sites we picked up. The other half will obviously be continuation of footprint 2025. I mean, as you build HDPE plant, glass beneficiation plants, which are already in the wing, they all help us to retain the margin in the business. So that will carry on as normal. So it's absolutely achievable. Obviously, part through volume, part through infrastructure. Brendan, anything you want to add?
Look, nothing really, Vic. You're on the money there too. I agree, Russell, that once we come back to normal, we get the CBDs, the cruise ships, the airlines, the tourism. We start getting that will deliver an element of leverage there. That won't get us all the way, so we can't just rely on that. But it's that continuous improvement that we've talked about across all elements of that solids business, including the materials reprocessing and the like. So they're all there as part of the mix to get us to those margins in future.
Great. And final two questions. Just on remediation, the cash outflow in the first half was lower than expectations. Is that just a timing of the cash flow profile, or, you know, there's no remediation slide this year? Is the longer-term total cash paid being adjusted, or is it just a timing in cash profile?
No, very good question. No, it's just a timing in cash profile, particularly, as you know, the major remediation efforts are in Melbourne. So COVID just hampered a little bit of that, but there's no change to our spend profiles at all, Russell.
Great. And then final question. I see in the accounts the acquisitions, what they contributed to your earnings this half. Just on the Grasshopper business, I mean, based on the run rate NPAT from that business, it looked like you paid a pretty hefty multiple and, you know, almost half the purchase price almost in goodwill. Can you possibly just talk through the synergies of that acquisition in New South Wales? Is there benefits that will come through Resource Co or something? Just talk through, I mean, the reasoning behind that acquisition, dude.
Yeah, sure. So you mentioned a couple of things here. So one, we needed to make sure that we have a C&D exposure across each state. New South Wales is the only one which we didn't have. And trying to find a right company to acquire in that space of that size is always a challenge. So once we found it, it makes a lot of sense. That's number one. Grasshopper also is one of the large customers of Resource Co, Russell, as you mentioned. So there's an internalizing benefit coming from there. And the third thing, we do believe that there's a synergies in the management team managed by the same team. We also have an extension of Erskine Park landfill, too, as I mentioned in that. So there's an internalizing benefit there as well. Plus, we also believe that there's an opportunity for Cleanaway to take CNI, CND collectively to certain set of customer segments, which in New South Wales we were not able to do because we didn't have that footprint. So there was a reason for all of that stuff. It's a good business, safe business, focused mainly on infrastructure space rather than the residential space, and that's what we like, and then kind of work that out. Brennan?
Yeah, let me just add to that, Russell. I mean, you're looking at three months is the period of ownership there, also during a COVID period as well. So I think you need to understand that the longer term, we're very, very happy with that business, and we look forward to our continued successes.
Great. Thanks, guys. I'll give someone else a turn. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Peter Stein from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi, Vic and Brendan. Thanks very much for your time, and echo Brendan's comments. Vic, all the very best, and thank you for your assistance over the years. I just wanted to ask you a question on the outlook commentary in particular. Obviously, the second half of last year was a period that started getting some of the COVID impact. How have you thought about COVID impact in the second half? Let's call it contingency in your thinking from a budgeting point of view in terms of what guardrails are around your outlook commentary. Could you just give us a bit of a sense of that and how we should think about it?
Yeah. So let me just go through a bit of a boring process for you, and then I'll come to that. So what very effectively, our finance team under Brendan does very effectively, like most companies, we have a budgeting process, then we do two half forecasts, F1 forecast and F2 forecast. So going into second half, and that's the norm, always done bottom up. So we get a sense of that, and we probably have a pretty good handle on what that looks like, of course, not all to. The challenge in this market is all about, it's an unpredictability and ambiguity around COVID. We feel confident enough that, as I said to in Russell's question, Peter, is because of the side growth we are having and the contracts we are, we feel pretty confident that barring an element which is outside our control, we are in good shape. But we still live in a world which is absolutely out of control. I mean, who would have thought a month ago that we were still talking about lockdown in Victoria? So those things remain absolutely out of control. But from a volume, from a growth perspective, we are on a very, very good trajectory. We are very confident in that. And in that, in the world where we, in an ambiguous world we live in, it didn't just make any sense to give a firm guidance, but we feel confident where the business stands, right? So that's where we are. Brendan, I don't know whether you want to add something to that.
That's exactly that, Pete. There's still a lot of uncertainty out there. We, you know, cruise ship business is not back. CBDs is not back. There's still a lot of businesses not quite back there yet, and tourism as well. So I don't think we could be any clearer at this stage.
Yeah, sure. No, I totally appreciate that. I guess what I was wondering is whether you'd built in some sort of margin for days of trading that are affected by a lockdown, as we've just seen the last 5 days in Victoria. You know, have you factored in some of that in your thinking?
I think if we factored that in the statement we have made, obviously in the forecast, we have factored that as well. But I mean, I think but that's what our business do is we've got to be nimble enough because I don't know what you can factor, frankly, Bill. So all you can do is number of working days, municipal contracts, they carry on. So you take a CNI risk in that, CNI plus minus, you have sensitivity around that. And then you also have a sensitivity cost or any other initiatives you will take. So you've done all that stuff, and hence we've landed where we've landed, I think.
Sure, no worries. Vic, and then just Western Sydney Energy from Waste, just quickly, you've expressed a reasonably significant degree of confidence that you'll get approval. You know, could you give us a little bit more detail in terms of some of the early engagements to the submissions you've had with particularly the councils that have raised queries and questions around it?
Yes, yeah, sure. So most of you have been working at this for almost 18 months. Before it came out on the surface that we were working on it in a public domain, you know, there's a massive effort has gone on in what we call social license to operate, Pete. We've worked with councils. We've met with the local councillors. We've done 40,000 letter drops. We've done shopping malls stands to explain to people what it is. Because what we have found globally, as well as everybody on this issue, once we've done polling groups, et cetera, once people know what it is, it's actually fear of an unknown. Once people understand what this is and what's the emissions quality nowadays, what's the technology, people generally cross Rubicon. I understand why this project is and how good that is. So more education we do, better it is. Having said that, when you put up a statement out and you put an engineering design out, it's a very complex project. So every council would then have a simple like, I don't understand why you would access traffic from north versus south of the land. Now, that technically is an objection, and we have to respond to that objection. So I'm not necessarily worried about the numbers of objections. I mean, that was expected, frankly. And frankly, more than 50 objections take us into the hand of Independent Planning Commission, which is good for us. But they are objections of technical nature. The emotive nature is not coming from councils, and we're dealing that with social license to operate. But they are very technical. They are good at clearing objections, and most of them are, help me explain more. What does this mean? Help me explain more. Can you confirm that your emissions are going to be this? Can you confirm you're not going to burn this? That kind of stuff, which is part and parcel of any engineering project, Pete. So I feel okay with that.
Perfect. Thanks, Vic. That makes sense. And then a last very quick question on CapEx. You have for some time spoken about 10% of revenue as a guide. You know, that's cash CapEx, leases on top of that. And you've guided to an increase in leases in the second half, probably almost a doubling. How do you think about lease on top of your, let's call it cash CapEx, on a go-forward basis? It's sort of, one gets a sense that you're probably going to have more cash CapEx and perhaps less leasing, provided you don't win a whole bunch of new work that is government-backed. Is that how one needs to think about it?
Yeah, that's, and Brendan will jump in immediately after. I just want to make sure we add, we are sticking to a 10% target. That is not changing. That's what good companies do. But we do see a trajectory. There are a lot of good contracts coming through. There are a lot of good contracts coming through, and we want to make sure we win them. And I think it is important that we leave that flexibility. And we've always said to you guys, that's a target, and we have consistently maintained those. But from half to half, that might go up simply because we won a contract and we want to get trucks or, you know, and look at Blacktown MRF for argument's sake, 115,000-ton MRF facility. We want a Blacktown contract, strategically very important because it feeds into waste to energy. Things like that, they are good assets, give us good returns. And I think having that flexibility just gives everybody a benefit for growth. But Brendan, you agree with that, man? You want to add to that?
So look, absolutely, Vic. And you're right, Pete. Yeah, yes, we've got some lease expenditure coming up. We match the cash outflows on the lease with cash inflows, 8 to 10 year contracts with the life of trucks, 8 to 10 years for the muni. So it all works very well. We've been quite successful in winning a lot of municipal contracts off competitors, and that's the strength of our CleanerView product, our CleanAway standards, our safety performance, and our experience in running muni. So you know, we've got a very good offering to the muni, and you can see it through the numbers of additional leases.
Perfect. Thanks, Vic and Brendan. I'll leave it there. Cheers.
Thank you. The next question comes from Cameron McDonald from E&P. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Can I just delve into, Vic, your comments around Grasshopper a little bit more with the synergies that you've identified there with Resource Co and Erskine Park in particular? You know, Resource Co is a JV, so those synergies are going to be shared with your with that JV, so you don't capture all of them. And the Erskine Park license upgrade is for 450,000 to 500,000 tonnes, which will be absorbed over a 2 to 4 year period. So that doesn't really give you a lot of additional capacity. And from what I understood, the Erskine Park landfill upgrade was really targeting soils and asbestos. So what sort of activities do you think Grasshopper is actually going to do, and just exactly how much synergy you expect out of that in New South Wales?
Yeah, thank you, Cam. Melissa, first of all, you're right on Resource Co and you're right on Erskine Park, so all of that data is correct. I think there are a couple of things, right? But there's a resource recovery opportunity there before it fits into Erskine Park. So that volume expansion, if done properly, there's an expansion, volume expansion opportunities. I also mentioned, if you remember, I did say that Grasshopper focuses a lot more on infrastructure than C&D. So you would expect there will be soil-related opportunities out of that, which fits into Erskine Park. So those opportunities are there, and depending on what kind of soil comes out, there's a further synergies with soils could be treated at a liquid facility in Marys, and then to Erskine Park. So there's a multiple path of value creation from Grasshopper. So it wasn't just about synergies, but it's also about making sure that we have a C&D footprint and presence across the nation, but synergies across both Erskine, Osco, Liquids, Technical Services. If they pick up a job which has a contaminated soil, well, that can't go into Erskine Park. They're probably going to Liquids and Technical Services. They'll get fixed up before it goes to Erskine Park. So there's a multiple path. Huh?
So does that mean that you'll have to also invest in further resource recovery equipment investment to deal with that waste before it goes into Resource Co?
No, not at all. It's going to Resource Co right now. So it is actually going into Resource Co, but as they grow more, it'll go into Resource Co. Now, there's no more resource recovery required. What I was saying, if they started going to C&D or B&D, let's put it that way, there's an opportunity to do resource recovery before it goes into Erskine Park Landfill. We are not saying we need to do that right now because their focus is infrastructure. I see a better path of Grasshopper to bring in salt from infrastructure projects into liquid sites, remove the contamination, and then going into Erskine Park. I think that's a more optimum path. Brendan, you want to add?
Yeah, I think one other thing too, Cameron, is that we have C&D capability in every state except New South Wales prior to Grasshopper. We have a huge customer base that wants some level of C&D support from us. So we bring those customers to that business, which is certainly another synergy we'll have.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then just looking at the solids business, you know, the revenue was sort of up 1%, but the landfill levies collected were down nearly 16%. Can you just delve into that a little bit as to what's happened there and how you've offset those? Because clearly volumes are down somewhere. So how have you offset that revenue decline through volume? Is that a big chunk of that, the diversion from New Chum?
Good question there. And you pointed out earlier in your questions around Erskine Park. So period-on-period comparisons with Erskine Park, the bulk of the landfill levy payments that declined are from Erskine Park. The landfill levy in Sydney is the highest in Australia, so you've got the highest landfill times the largest drop in volumes. Mm-hmm. So predominantly most of it was mostly from Erskine Park. And then we had MRL in Melbourne. Once again, less volumes through COVID and that. So, and then I think in Queensland, not so much, a little bit there from further resource recovery, but we've got a strong resource recovery capability now in Queensland. Melbourne is coming back from COVID, and you'll see, as you said, we've got the height growth project there for Erskine Park going forward.
So just having said that, though, I mean, so that the landfill levies give a pretty good indication of what volumes have done, but your revenue is up. So because you're clearly not doing, you know, that volume at a zero margin over the landfill levy. So where have you made up the difference?
Well, we're definitely doing a lot more resource recovery across all our landfills now before it goes into landfill. So there's a investment had gone into resource recovery in Brooklyn facility in Melbourne. There's a significant resource recovery facility gone in at the Mount New Chum in Billabong. So you will be seeing impact of that come as well into those, which helps improve the quality of the earnings and the margin improvement.
Okay, so do you have a sense of what your percentage of resource recovery actually is?
No, we don't put that out there, man. Sorry.
Okay, and final question, just your comment about you're not seeing irrational pricing in municipal waste contracts. What are you actually seeing in terms of those pricing or the pricing behaviour?
Sorry, Matt, what I was saying, we are not seeing irrational.
Yeah, no, that's what I meant. Yeah, you're not seeing irrational pricing at this stage, but are you seeing in terms of those pricing trends?
So in municipalities, always, there are not many players in municipalities. Huh? In base segment and different segments, there are different players. But in base, especially in municipalities, you are quoting a project which could be anything from 10 to 15 years. You are committing to buying, depending on the size of the contract, anything from 10 to 40 trucks. You are now committing a certain level of service, and you need to demonstrate your balance sheet, and you need to demonstrate a significant expertise and experience in the municipalities. What that does is there are only two or three players who commit to that kind of a commitment, and they're big companies, and they're all good players with experience municipal history. So they all know, as Cleanaway would know, that bringing in or picking up a municipal contract through an irrational price behavior, it does nothing but bring for 10 and a half years or 15 years. So that's why I've always seen in municipalities, municipal contracts, because players are big, rational, understand cost structure, understand the risk, we generally find it to be a rational behavior. Now, also, municipalities, when they give you a 40 contract, price is only one of the four or five components. The others are your balance sheet, your discipline, your experience dealing with different municipalities. All of that comes here, and your logistics and transport solutions, they are becoming big now. Our CleanAview, which is our technical fleet management system, that's a big driver for portals. All that comes into the picture. So you don't necessarily have to be the cheapest in the market in a muni contract. Having said that, muni players generally are rational because of the commitment they're making. CNI, SME CNI space is a different space. It's fragmented and always going to be like that. So that's how it works.
So just following on from that, we perhaps might want to take this offline when we chat later, but if I look at the announcements made in Victoria, particularly around Wyndham, which is a very big contract, pretty big contract, which you won, the tender price range was, 30% difference. And Wyndham has actually come out and said that they're going to get a 3.6% decline in price per household. So, they're pretty big numbers. So how does that, a 30% variance on the contract offer is a pretty big variance.
Well, it depends on, I won't go into individual contract, and we're better off taking it offline as a team. But just to give you an example, Wyndham was the contract which was run by municipalities, right? That's number one. Number two, with time, with passage of time, 10, 15 years, the tenements locations change. So you could have a bunch of housing in one slot, and then you have the whole street of five streets by unit. Now that becomes, rather than an individual, you might be collecting a combined front lift or rear lift truck. So there is no comparison between what was happening before and what was happening after. And especially if the municipal contract was run by council themselves, and I'm not sure whether Wyndham was, but if I recall it was, then of course it's going to be cheaper. That's just a fact of life. Now, if it was run by other players and the pricing was given 10 years ago in a particular tenement, and remember, even in muni contracts, prices keep going up every year. There's a price escalation every year. So I can't tell you what the price escalation mechanism was 10 years ago, whoever was doing that. We know when we win, we know our expectations, exactly what our EBITDA expectations are. And I can assure you, no contract has gone below those expectations. We would not sign those contracts.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, Vic.
Thank you, man.
Thank you. The next question comes from Jacob Kakanis from Jarden, Australia. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. I'll keep it quite brief. Can you just please speak to some of the competition that you're seeing in the health segment and maybe delineate that between collections and post-collections, please?
Sure. So as you know, on the collection side, we believe we are a market leader on both sides. So on the collection side, obviously, we are competing with, a couple of players to whom we also supply our Sharp Smart system, or the system which we bought by ASP, a generic system. So even when the competitors are doing some collection, we have an opportunity to grow our business. On the post-collection side, obviously, as you know, we've got the autoclaves and incinerators spread across the country, and that gives us a significant amount of benefit, and we continue to develop them further. There are private owners who have incinerators in Brisbane and Melbourne, and there's one company who has an autoclave in Newcastle. Only one big company have a prized health assets in Sydney, and I think one has a shrinking asset in South Australia. And we collectively, Daniels has six of its own. So we do believe we have a very good competitive advantage on both sides. With ASP coming into our portfolio, we are manufacturing those Sharp Smart businesses locally in Australia, so we are not at the mercy of import channels, especially in the pandemic world. So that has given us a lot of good story. And the other thing is, once the plastic pelletizer plants are complete, just think about the selling pitch from our side to a hospital. We collect container deposit scheme plastics, we process them through a plastic pelletizing plant, that flake and pellet then makes HDP or whatever it is, then goes and make Daniel Sharp Smart, which goes into hospitals. So there's a circular economy story on the collection side, and obviously you need to have good assets, well-run assets from a post-collection. So that's where we stand today. I'm a leadership position on both ends.
Thanks, Vic. So is it right to think, even if the collections intensity of competition increases, that you benefit on the post-collection side of things just based on the infrastructure that you just laid out there from that, competitors?
That would be the case. If nobody else builds any more post-collection assets, which are extremely hard to come, considering the complexity and the licenses involved in that, if there's a more intensity of collection, we'll still have a benefit on the post-collection side, which is actually the core of our Footprint 2025 strategy. Build a prized asset at the back end, and it becomes a door to the fragmenting nature of the collections.
Okay, thank you. Just a quick one for Brendan. The other cost line, other than the waste disposal cost, seemed as though the biggest mover in costs in the half. Can you just elaborate what happened in that and the sustainability of that moving into the second half of 21, please?
Sorry, Jake, you're looking at the consolidated income statement, are you, and the collection, recycling, yeah, and waste disposal?
So obviously that's going to be related to volumes, but I was wondering if you could just add some more context to what's happening to the other cost line and just the sustainability of that into the second half, please.
Yeah, so one of the big things that I think was pointed out by one of our callers earlier about the levy payments reducing. At the end of the day, levy payments are a cost in our statutory P&L. What we do in our presentations is show you net revenue, but the levies are actually a cost. So they've reduced in that line there, together with the rebates to on commodities as well. So they're the two big line item movements.
Sorry, Brendan, I think that may have been confused. Can you just clarify what's moving in the other cost line? I think the volumes explain what's moving in that waste disposal cost line. Can you just explain what's moved in the other costs?
The other expenses and the rebates.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Raju Ahmed from CCZ Equities. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Just a couple of questions. First one, if we could just revisit your outlook commentary. So based on the few analyst questions before, I've formed the view that your outlook commentary is cautious, and that's it. Fair enough. So if on that assumption, Vic, Brendan, are you able to give us a sense of at what point in the next 1, 2, 3 months, do you say that we're in the home stretch in terms of meeting our moderate growth expectations? Are you looking for specific catalysts to emerge, or any changes in the mechanics of the company? Can you just give us some color in that respect?
Yeah. So I mean, it's straightforward, Raju. I mean, we are sitting at now middle of February. There are about 21 working days in each month. So if you think about that, you're looking at 84 to 90 working days between now and 30th of June. Every month end, you know, team will have their numbers come through from right bottom up. So we'll start getting a pretty good sense around March, April. I think that'll be a good sense, I guess. But because of the system we have in the organization, There is an opportunity to take action early around April, May, if you feel there's a concern. But I don't see that. Brendan, anything to add to Raj's point? I think we systems work pretty well on that one. You're on mute. You're mute.
Sorry, it had to happen sooner or later during the call.
Yeah.
Look, no, nothing to add, Vic. Thank you.
Raju?
Yep, thank you on that one. The next question is just going back to your earlier slide. You mentioned that commodities revenue is about 4% of net revenue, I think gross revenue right now, and you do separately highlight it. Looking ahead in this financial year, with some commodity prices starting to increase, like the corrugated cardboard and so on, Do you see the prospects of the earnings feed from that commodity revenue to increase in this second half?
Well, I mean, we would have taken that into forecast anyway, Raju. The boys and girls would have done that. So that's it's difficult to predict commodity pricing in such a volatile world at this point. I do want to remind you, though, Matt, is that when we presented commodity details about a year ago, when there was a lot of discussions around that, if you remember, I said it's actually not the revenue. It's about how you manage the rebates post that. One of the challenges in commodity was that we were paying substantial amount of rebates back to the customers. If you remember, we then committed that we have stopped that. We don't pay rebates to small SMEs or mid-markets, and we only pay for national accounts. So basically what we did was we fundamentally de-risked ourselves from commodity price going up and down, because what used to happen was prices would go up or down, but we'll lock into rebate mechanism, and that would affect us. Now, we don't do that. If it goes down, then our rebate to national accounts goes down significantly, same with it. So we have de-risked that, but on the flip side, we don't get the upside when it goes up either, but the rebate to national accounts goes up. So that was necessary because we knew there'll be volatility for next at least 2-3 years of this issue.
Okay, that's helpful. The last one is more around the management transition. Obviously, you're leaving the MD's role. I suppose in the context of the Footprint 2025 strategy, where acquisitions, it appears, will play a big part going forward, with the transition in key executives in the months ahead, are you looking to slow down on the acquisitions front to allow the next MD to have a greater responsibility on that front, or is it a case of just keep going as it is?
Okay, I'll make a comment and then I'll hand over to Brendan. I think, as Brendan said, there's no change to strategy. I also would make a point, which I was going to make it at the end, and I'll remake it at the end. Cleanaway has a very good management team. I mean, the results shows that, the earnings by segments shows that, and it is just not the direct reports to CEO and MD, Raju. It's the next level, which is very good, which we call our executive leadership team, which is the top 46 people. They are class operators, absolutely class operators. So I don't think anything's stopping. They're fired up. They want to keep, you know, they've seen the success of what company can do over the last 5.5 years. And I'm absolutely certain they'll carry on with that. Brennan, you want to add to that, Raju's concern, man, if any?
Yeah, look, I will. And look, Raju, I think Vic's put a lot of processes in place. Our Clean Away way, which supports the way we do things. We're all very focused, very committed. Our leadership teams, as Vic said, the top 46 committed. Our XCOM have been around for years, many years, in fact, particularly the two leaders running the liquid waste and health and also solid waste. And the board is absolutely committed to our strategy. So it doesn't change, and we will progress.
Okay. That's great to hear. So I'll leave it there. Thank you very much for your time.
We should wrap up. Any last final questions, guys?
Thank you. Our last question comes from Amit Kawana from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for the last question opportunity. I just wanted to unpick some of the outlook comments that you have mentioned. So essentially, you've kept the outlook same, which is moderate growth in the EBITDA. Based on the other comments you mentioned at the AGM, it looks like your second quarter EBITDA growth was higher than the first quarter, as well as if I think about second half 21 versus an easy PCP on the second half 20, given the EBITDA decline. So is it fair to think that the second half 21 EBITDA growth would be ahead of the first half 21?
Yes. Simple as that. Absolutely yes. That's a fair assumption.
And, I mean, the first half 21 grew by 2.9%. So how would you say, this as a moderate, or what's the moderate for for you guys? Is it mid-single or am I stretching too much into this?
Yeah, I think you're stretching a little bit, Matt. I think, you know, last year we did $515.6 million, right? $500.7 million, Richie just tells me. And the consensus is sitting at 532, 533. That's about 3% above where we finished last year, right? So even all of you guys believe it's moderately modest growth anyway. So I leave it at that. I think the second half will be stronger. Just mathematically, it will be stronger. We do not expect the level of lockdown we faced in the first half as we expect. But again, the problem is we had a lot of discussion within the business. There's a really split camp within whether we give an earning guidance or not. And it is purely boils down to the ambiguity around the environment, which we face ourselves. Simple as that. We are confident we're going to grow. But obviously, as you can see, we're not the only one. Most enterprises are saying we're in an ambiguous environment. So take it that way. And if the COVID-19 doesn't hit second half, then your assumptions are right.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for that. Just a couple more. Just on the industrial and waste business. Now, obviously, net revenues, they seem to be declining as you are exiting low margin work, but then your margins are already at the targeted levels. So is it fair to think that there won't be any ongoing decline, or you have exited all of those low margin work from your business?
Which segment are you talking about, IWS or generally?
IWS.
Oh, IWS. No. Yeah, so we mentioned about when we acquired Talkspree, this business used to do, I think, 6% EBITDA, I remember, combined in. And we said at that particular time that is not good enough. And I said it very clearly. We have businesses doing 25% EBITDA, and we have enough opportunities for allocate our cash. We are not going to waste time and energy into a business which only gives 6% EBITDA. And we said, and then when we did the integration work, we realized that they were actually, because we had some very bad poor margin contracts. So what we then went on a journey as part of the transformation of this business was, we will focus on a sector of resources and infrastructure only. We will not deal with second tier contractors who normally never pay us on time. Plus you end up dealing with literally handyman rates. Walked away from that. We will only deal with tier one companies and on a proportionate rate with a good rate who value our safety, who value what we do as an established company. And that's what the margin you saw. And we set up a target of where we need to be. Now, we have just achieved that second round target of 15.7 EBITDA. And we need to maintain and grow it, of course. I mean, if the infrastructure boom, it happens, as people, everybody tells me, then it should grow. But at this point, it doesn't mean we need to go backwards. I'm saying that's a target we set, and we got to consistently deliver those targets.
All right, great. Thanks for that. And just the final one. Just on the recycling fund, now obviously there's $190 million of the federal government grant that's there. So can you just provide an update of how much of this is already granted by the government in total and potential, and what's your share of this?
Yeah.
And maybe touch on what's the kind of target you're looking internally to pursue these opportunities over the medium term, please.
Yeah, so I don't know how much that has been granted. As you can imagine, you probably have to go to the government website to find that out. We're applying for whenever grants are applicable, but there's no internal target that we need to get 50 million of them. It's just our strategy drives the grant application. If we get it, we get it. If we don't get it, strategy is still sound, and it makes mathematically sense for us to still invest in that. So I would stop it at that because I want to just give a couple other people to ask more questions. To wrap up, is that okay? And then we can take it offline.
All right, I'll leave it there. Thanks for the
question. Okay. Can I just request one question each participant, please, so we can get everybody a chance? Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Scott Ryle from Rimmer Equity Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much. Vic, I was hoping you could make a few comments on the changes in the industry you've seen over the last 5 years and what you're expecting for the next 5 to 10. So the first one, just in terms of the customer environment, and maybe it's different with government and commercial enterprises, but has the drive for the most competitive price changed somewhat in terms of the priorities of what customers are looking for versus the ability to offer a circular solution to be more sustainable, you know, those sorts of things. Have you noticed any changes, and do you expect any changes for the next next number of years?
Listen, I think the world has changed in our world. It's gone from a waste management to sustainability discussion. So, I mean, the large customers, I mean, obviously they want the best price, of course, but the large customers start the conversation from a waste management perspective first, before they go into, from sustainability first to go to waste management. And hence, when you have price infrastructure like us, you have the capacity to have a different discussion on what we can offer. So without naming a customer, you know, they had a very clear sustainability goals over the next 4 or 5 years. We committed to those goals, and then the pricing discussion came after. 5 years ago or 10 years ago, it will be a classic old-fashioned service, go and pick up my bin and they give me at the cheapest price. I'm absolutely seeing that conversation changing. We saw that 5 years ago, and that's the reason we started building the assets. And I think that'll carry on. I absolutely see that carrying on. The SME sector will take a long time, of course, to get there, but the large and medium enterprise and the government sector will carry on doing that. So that's what I expect.
Thank you. The next question comes from Cindy Shao from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just one question on plastic catalyzing facilities. Do you see the current competition landscape in general for this plastic reprocessing facilities like? And do you see your JV in New South Wales has direct competition against the VC's Smithfield RPET facility?
Well, I think, as I said before, what is happening in this space is there's a convergence of industries, right? So waste management either goes downstream because they collect the waste, either they go downstream and then process, or the manufacturers come upstream and create buy the raw material from us and then change it. But none of that, and that's so our competition is not necessarily waste companies. As the largest collector, our competition is mainly the non-waste companies, the manufacturers who might want to come upstream, and hence our joint venture with the manufacturers like Asahi, et cetera, to make sure we participate in the supply chain. So the plastics and glass of the world is now converging into two different sectors. And I absolutely was keen, I still am, and Brendan agrees with me, is that we cannot miss this opportunity of going downstream and optimizing margins. And that's what we're going to do. And that's the plan.
We'll take one
more in the interest of time, guys. That's okay.
Thank you. The next question comes from James Brennan Chong from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. I'll be brief. Brendan, perhaps more directed at you, given you spoke about the outlook commentary, but I'm just wondering if you could cast some views on how costs will come back into the business as we exit COVID. Specifically, I noticed, you know, your voluntary staff turnover is still depressed relative to even pre-tox era. I'm guessing that, you know, as SMEs come back, the truck trips will start to lengthen as there are more pickups, and, you know, more traffic on the street might mean that, you know, truck lengths lengthen and, you know, overtime starts to creep back into the business. Just wondering how you think about that, and, you know, does that mean that recent margin growth needs to take a bit of a breather? Thank you.
Thanks, James. Look, I actually don't think so. Firstly, we're an industrial business, so we've always got our cost focus in our business. When we see volumes coming back, the leverage that we will get will more than outweigh the costs, and we will make sure of that. So no, I'm not concerned about that. We've got our disciplines. We've got our plans ready. We've done it in some other states already. We've got a playbook. You know, we know where that playbook goes and takes us to, and we're ready for, say, more comeback in Victoria and how we'll actually, yes, there'll be some extra overtime there, but you've got to remember, there's no more depots. There's no more Brendan's or Vic's. There's no other cost there. It's just the marginal cost of picking up those extra bins. So very, very comfortable with that, and very comfortable to have our costs under control.
Operator, we'll wrap it at this point, if that's okay. James, we can take any other questions offline, man, if that's all right with you.
Absolutely. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Listen, I just want to, if you can please indulge me for 30 seconds, considering it's my last session, I just want to sincerely thank you for your support and friendship. You know, business is done when you enjoy it, and I absolutely enjoyed every single minute of it, every single day of it. And interaction with you guys have made me a better executive and a better leader. I also, it would be remiss in me saying, I've led a great organization. These are good people, honest people, salt of the earth people, and they do great service for the country and great service for the society. And there are 6,000 of them who have given me an honor to lead this organization. And without their support, I wouldn't be able to do what I did. So I thank them all. I thank you all. I thank all the shareholders, all the employees. And goodbye, and I'll see you around in Investor Roadshow and hopefully see you in the second innings. Thank you very much. All the best. Good luck.
Thank you all.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.